2 months ago. We open to the halls of Horizon High being flooded by students after the release of class. Most of the student body is drawn in a near faceless lack of detail, all save for one, a scrawny freshman with oversized clothes and messy dark hair. After the panels that showcase him being knocked around within the crowd, we come to realize that we have seen this character before. One, Felix DeCastro, not yet a member of the Manimals and still a month away from his bird-like transformation. Unable to maintain his footing in the crowd, we continue to watch as he's pushed and jostled. Several thought bubbles can be seen in these panels. Mindless drones, sheeple, trained by bells and herded through hallways, too blind even to realize the shallow, pointless lives they lead. And although they refuse to see me now, crash. Felix takes a tumble, and a speech bubble cuts in the frame. Hey, you blind nerd? Why do dweebs keep bumping into me and making me angry? The next panel shows Chadworth, and his slicked back hair, popped collar, and two goons, looming over Felix. What, you nerds think I enjoy this sort of thing? I mean, I ain't gonna deny it. Yo, pick up the geek and let's dangle him from a window or something. Wide-eyed, Felix looks up at his attackers. He stammers, don't, I... The crowd of students in the hallway has, at this point, circled the spectacle. Some cheer on Chadworth and his gang because kids are cruel, I guess. However, just before Felix is grabbed, another speech bubble enters the panel.
Hey, leave him alone.
In a panel that's drawn in a much more dramatic fashion than warranted for the situation, we see the gathered crowd has parted, and standing center frame is Madison Myers. Her best friend Lexi peeks over Maddie's shoulders as if to remind the reader that, yes, she's here too. Felix's gaze shifts from Chadworth's crew to Maddie. His eyes widen, his cheeks go red because in that single moment, all he can think of is how beautiful she looks. Whoa, boys, hold up, commands Chadworth as he throws his arms up in fake surrender. Let's not upset Princess Vigilante. We all know her grandpa's Looney Tunes. As Chadworth and his crew leave Felix to pick himself up, they pass by Maddie and Lexi. In the panel that Chadworth crosses Maddie, his speech bubble reads, A+, Hall Monitor. Maybe you'll actually get to graduate to real hero someday. By this time, students have lost interest in the scene. Well, except for Felix. As he watches, he thinks to himself, she's perfect, but no, she can't be. Come on, Felix, pull it together, think. She saved you because she's physically stronger. Superpowers do that. That's all you're lacking before people like Chadworth start rightfully respecting you. Sky Valor, she was born with powers. She knows nothing of what she wields, but I will find out. I will come to understand the makings of a hero and all the flaws that come with it.
A final close-up panel of Felix's face, now twisted with a malicious smile.
First, however, it would appear that I'll need to find a means to enhance my physical capabilities.
So, Todd, for your scene tonight, I'm going to ask you to frame the beginning of this section, of this scene.
So it's probably starting with him outside the biome. You'll just see a sigh come out of his mouth. He's kind of like head down at this point. He's got his hood off. He's a little down after seeing Mary and Tate together like that. It's just going to be a few panels of him walking home alone. There might be lampposts above him, but the lights are out to just show that little bit of inner sadness. Him getting to in front of his house, just looking up at it, walking through the door, maybe showing the hoodie being thrown onto the couch, maybe with his dad asleep on it, and then walking up the stairs and the next one opening Talia's door to see how she's doing.
When you push on the door to open it, it's actually already open a small crack. It wasn't latched closed or anything like that. The lights aren't full on in here, but they're kind of dimmed. Your sister Talia, bandaged up from what you did for her earlier this evening, is sitting on the edge of her bed. You can see the bandaging from like maybe her arms or whatever, but she's wearing like her bathrobe, the fancy hoodie that she was wearing that I think you had to take off to bandage her is still on the floor where you left it. And she's just kind of staring down at the floor at it when you open the door.
Hey, looks like the tooth floss stitch is held. I always said that was bullshit, but apparently it works.
She gives you this half grin, like the one corner of her mouth kind of curls a little bit, and she looks over at you, just kind of turning her head slightly.
She'll see the bruises.
Yep. Your own battle wounds.
Yep, a big, huge, like, fist-sized bruise on his right arm where the tire iron hit, a couple bruises on his face, his hands are all scraped up.
So we get one panel of her just, like, looking at you and not saying anything. And then we get the one where she kind of half grins and there's a small speech bubble that just says, "Did you have to use the mint flavored floss? It stings."
Yeah, but now they're minty fresh. I like to imagine they just both chuckle.
Yeah, absolutely. She motions with her hand for you to come in and says, "Close the door quietly."
Don't tell me what to do. Slam the door. Yeah, Todd will close the door and go in. How long have you been fighting crime?
Couple years. Well, part of that was training.
What? Years?
She nods.
And you have powers too.
She nods again.
It just shows a panel of them just sitting next to each other. Then one of him with his right arm just thwacking her in the back of the head and then holding his arm in pain going, "Why didn't you tell me?"
She's like holding the back of her head in pain. And she says, "I wanted to tell you. I was going to tell you. I just wanted to wait for the right time."
"When's the right time?"
"Well, it was going
to
be
when I'm forced to bandage up my sister and then go beat up the assholes who beat her up."
"Oh, well, I didn't expect this to happen, but it was going to be soon."
"Well, soon became now."
It did. So great. Now you know.
"By the way, I have dirt on those assholes." He'll pull out the tablet. "Come here, wants to see me."
She looks at the tablet.
"Yes, those are, in fact, big evil files."
"Those are the big crime files?"
"Yeah. It's really dumb that they named them that way.
Criminals do dumb shit all the time. You mentioned Chimera?"
"Yeah, he said he wants to see me. It's time to bring me into the fold, I think he said. Something like that."
"Yeah, we've been talking about it a little bit more often since what happened on Remembrance Day."
"So why is his contact Grandpa in your phone?"
"In case he calls. I didn't really know what else to put him down as. I felt like a decent cover."
"I mean, you could have just said it was like, just put any girl's name, said like, Jeannie. Oh yeah, it's just my pal Jeannie calling."
She kind of shrugs.
"Instead you go with our dead grandpa."
"Well, it could have been our other grandpa. We technically have two.
We both know he doesn't talk to us. Save the girl."
"That's good. Did you do it on your own?"
"No, I had a backup. My friend."
"Is he one of the ones from the thing at City Hall?"
"Yeah, he's the one who I told you about who ended up throwing me halfway down the escalator."
"Sounds like a good friend."
"Apparently he was having some sort of PTSD flash forward, flashback or something. I don't know. Powers are weird, dude."
"Oh, a friend with baggage. Chimera's gonna love him."
"Yeah, Chimera said I could bring him along."
"Did he really?"
"Totally. Just a big smile on his face. Yeah, he was so proud of me getting the information. He said, bring the guy who helped."
"Okay, well, we'll see." Her gaze settles back on the hoodie on the floor. "I really was planning on telling you, about all this. At first, I didn't tell you because I wanted to figure it out for myself, what was going on with me, what I could do. And then I wanted to figure out who Chimera was when he reached out to me. And then I wanted to make sure that this was something that would be fitting for you if I told you about it."
"What, kicking ass, taking names? Being a big goddamn hero?
Yeah, being a big goddamn hero.
Hey, I'm better than half the schmucks in this town anyway, so what's wrong with being a big damn hero?
Your behavior sometimes was a little suspect, Todd. Hell, it still is.
Hey, I was on medbay. I'm not sus.
Stop playing video games with Robbie so much.
Hey, I'll have you know that I sure yukened a motherfucker tonight, and it knocked him out.
Really? You kept trying to do that during training.
Yeah, turns out you have powers, so I thought it was going against a normie, and I wasn't.
Yeah, well...
What can you do, by the way?
Kind of the same thing you can do, just not as long range.
Oh, you teleport too. See, that... I knew that you somehow knew what I was going to do before. Because you could do it to you, son of a... You're a cheater. You know what? You're a fucking cheater.
How am I a cheater?
He's just throwing a little fit about this. Fucking knew something was up.
Yeah, we call it blinking. I can move through very short distances very quickly. Usually there's an after image. It really helps in the middle of combat, typically.
Yeah, not against 8 people. Especially when they have guns.
Yeah. Thanks for digging that bullet out, too, by the way.
Couldn't let you bleed out. Mom and Dad would be pissed. Just another smile.
Yeah, it would stain their rug. Ruin the house value.
It would have to have value first.
She laughs again, but the laugh kind of gets cut off with kind of a groan as she winces a little bit and like grabs her abdomen.
Tire iron?
Yeah. You don't see him around too much these days.
I had a duel with him when I had a metal bat.
Probably not a bad idea to carry a weapon.
It worked well for the first guy. I broke his arm. Training's been...
What happened to... You saved the girl, but what happened to Tire Iron and the rest of the syndicate that had her?
We got into a little scrape. Then after enough time to let the girl get time to run, me and my buddy bolted.
Did they see your face?
I was just wearing a hoodie, so it's hard to say. I don't think so.
Did they see your friend's face?
He was also wearing a hoodie, so again, I don't think so.
Okay. Obviously, they saw her face. Do you know why they took her?
Yeah, they were looking for that asshole who caused all the problems on Remembrance Day, Splice.
She know him?
Yeah, he's the one who gave her her powers.
She one of the manimals?
Still the dumbest fucking name. Yes, she was.
It's terrible. It's almost as dumb as Grey Ghost Syndicate.
God, whoever comes up with these villains suck.
It's the world we live in. It's very uncreative. Very stupid.
Like Horizon City. What a dumb fucking name. I'm done trashing you now, Chris.
Oh, no, it's great. It's good. No worries. So then what we have are 2 leads. One is in the tablet in the big crime files, and the other is finding Splice before they do.
Yeah, Mary says she doesn't know what happened to him, but I mean, other members of the manimals went to go to our school, so maybe we can pick them up, see what they know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably what Camaro will want us to do.
I mean, I kind of have a... kind of know where one of them likes to hang out.
Probably best to try to get the tablet to Camara first and see what he has to say. But that's definitely a problem for someone who's a bit more healed up than the both of us right now.
Hey, at least I only have bruises. This gunshot wound.
She looks at you, her eyes narrow, and she just says, I could fix that for you.
Gets like right up in her face, narrows his eyes, says, fucking do it.
She leans in a little bit closer and she says, don't make me do it, I will.
Bring it. Like literally face to face now.
Yeah. Your foreheads clink together. And I think at that point, like maybe she winces from leaning over. Maybe you get a little bit of I don't know, maybe the head.
Whoa, concussion setting in.
Yeah, the concussion setting in. So you two touch foreheads and then immediately start wincing in pain from your wounds. And she just kind of collapses back into the bed and lays down and says, you know what, maybe I'll shoot you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll dodge your bullet tomorrow.
Why don't you hold on to the tablet and keep it somewhere safe? Since it's your big night, you big goddamn hero.
You're damn straight, it's my night. Saved your ass, saved her ass, kicked some ass. I'm all about ass tonight.
Yep, that's enough out of you, brother. I'm good. Boy, am I tired.
I hear that's what happens when you get shot.
Also bleeding. A bit.
I think we have some orange juice downstairs.
Go to bed, Todd.
Good night, Talia.
She waves you off.
He'll get up, tablet in hand, and as he's about to close the door, he'll turn back, point down at the high-tech hoodie and be like, when am I getting mine?
And I feel like if you're okay with that, unless you have a better idea, that that's a good last panel.
No, that's perfect.
Okay, great. Great. Yeah. So maybe we get, maybe that panel's framed, like we get it from the bed where she's laying and she's kind of in silhouette and close up and you're in the doorway lit up looking down, and that's the speech bubble.
Absolutely.
I don't think I want to frame your scene that night. I think I'm going to ask you to establish a few panels showing what happens that evening, but not go into too much detail about it.
That's legit.
And then I'll set up the framework for the actual scene itself. But if you want to just describe to me the panels that show how that night concludes.
They had that conversation earlier. He already told her what to do. And so after that panel of them walking away, and I guess all of Todd's panels, you'll see him sneaking back into his room and sort of laying on his bed and just waiting. And then you'll see sort of like a text bubble from underneath the door, like a knocking. And then more text bubbles from his parents being like, who could that be at this time of night, etc. And then sort of an exclamation as they bring in Mary and she spins some story about needing a place to stay because things aren't okay at home, or whatever her excuse is that she tells my parents. But I think like the entire scene is going to happen off screen, and so you're only going to see the text bubbles coming in from underneath Tate's door, and then eventually things will like calm down and he'll go to sleep.
Second to last panel, Tate laying in bed, closing his eyes. Last panel of that scene, black panel. Next panel is bright, exceptionally bright. The sky is blue and clear. There's no clouds in the sky, but the sun. It's huge and burning in the sky. Tate, you stand and you can feel sand on your feet and it burns. You definitely feel like the soles of your feet against this coarse, hot sand, beginning to kind of swell up with discomfort. There is a breeze passing over your body, and it's just warm and dry and uncomfortable.
I imagine imagining the establishing shots. So, like, you have brightness, and then it'll actually show his feet. Like, that's where it starts, with just, like, you can tell that it's hot because there's, like, a heat haze.
So you get that breeze rustling his clothing. It's the same clothing he laid down to sleep in. What clothing is he wearing when he goes to sleep, finally?
He's wearing, like, shorts and like, a t-shirt.
Okay. Finally, the next panel has him from, like, the shoulders up. Behind him, we can see just an expanse of deserts that goes on as far as the eyes can see. But what do we see in his face?
That's a great question. If this is sort of a direct transition from the previous one, if he thought he was falling asleep and he wakes up and this is where he is, this is not the first time something like this has happened. So I think he just kind of looks to the left and to the right and then starts walking. Kind of like, yep, this is how it goes.
Yeah, and we get next few panels. Tate walking through desert. Nothing around him, just him in the middle of the panel walking along an expanse of desert.
Different angles, though. So, like, you see him from the front walking, and then you'll see, like, one of those from the top, so you can see the footprints behind him. And then you see one from the back, so that you can see how there's still just nothing in front of him.
And, like I said, we get a few panels of that until the panel that kind of breaks the mold, so to speak,
is he takes another step, but we see that he steps on a large white feather. Definitely noticeable if he's walking in bare feet, enough to cause him to pause in his tracks. If he surveys the area, it immediately becomes clear that there's a trail of feathers. Not like a lot of them, but there's definitely like a feather here, a feather there, a feather a few feet in front of that one.
I think what he'll do is he'll probably pick up that first feather that he stepped on and then follow the trail of feathers, sort of just playing with it in his hands.
And I think as you're playing within your hands, a couple of things stand out just about how the feathers feel. They're exceptionally soft, like silky smooth, and they're cool, like noticeably cool compared to the dry, hot air around you.
Might actually pick up a second one in that case and then start using them to like touch my face and like just do my best to make myself a little bit more comfortable.
What we probably see is after a few panels pass of you collecting these feathers and like getting a bundle of them and like maybe holding them close to your like neck or something like that, or face every once in a while, the stark brightness or the haze lines lessen a little bit in these panels. That is until one of the feathers you pick up, it's wet and it's warm and it's sticky and it's red.
Well, that's never a good sign. Well, considering last confrontation I had with an angel, maybe it is a good sign. Let's see where it came from.
And Tate, as you're studying this and thinking that to yourself, the wind picks up again, but this time it noticeably sounds like an exhale. A moment passes, and then it happens again.
Oh no. He gets nervous, visibly, and he looks around for the direction of the wind. Maybe I'll hold up a feather and just, like, let it fall.
You do, and you let the feather fall just as the next gust of wind passes. And this time, it doesn't sound like an exhale. It sounds like an inhale. And the feather blows off to your right.
And that's the direction I need to go.
And every few steps, there's an exhale. Every few steps, it's an inhale. With each breath, the breeze feels just a little bit cooler. Just a little bit than before.
I think I'm going to start picking up the pace.
So are we just seeing Tate like sprinting through, jogging through the desert with a bundle of feathers?
Yeah, like he will definitely stuck some of the feathers in like the band of his shorts to keep like his waist / like stomach, etc. cool. And then he's just holding up bundles in his like other hands. But yeah, at first he was just walking, but now he's like, then you see him like walking faster and faster until he's running. Sort of like he did the very first time he was in a dream and it was fall but winter.
Yeah. As we see him jogging, and we might get a few sound bubbles from him of, you know, inhaling and exhaling as he's jogging, it starts to sync up with the breeze, which is noticeable because the breeze itself is picking up pace. It's breathing quicker. At some point during this, when the sound effects for the breeze is exhale, inhale, it shifts into words. And the words are, "You're too late."
Now he's definitely sprinting.
Sure, and once he starts sprinting, the breeze stops. It is no longer breathing with you. And the feathers are nowhere to be found. And once we see all of that in panels and see him sprinting, he sees, obvious in the sands, drag marks, like a path, a trail of something being dragged through the sands.
Yep, just following the path and hoping it's not my family again.
The path leads off into the distance. It seems to go between a couple of large rocks that are sticking out of the sands, goes through them, and then curves around behind one of them. And as Tate, as you're sprinting, you notice damp splotches in the sands. There's blood mixed in with this drag trail. The other thing you notice in this trail are, again, feathers, but this time they are bloodied and tattered. And the last thing I will say before you, I'm assuming inevitably round the corner, is as you close in on those two rocks, you hear the awful sounds of crunching and squishing as if meats were being ripped apart and chewed.
That's definitely something that would make him slow down a little bit, but I think how he's going to slow down is he's going to hit the rocks, but he's going to like reach out a hand to sort of help stabilize slash pivot around to see what's going on. Maybe he'll skid a little bit, potentially fall over onto his hands and knees.
So he's essentially peeking around the corner of the rock.
Yes, but like he meant to do it like, oh yeah, let me grab this as I'm going and just look. And just, he's going too fast, his legs are hurt. Like, he hits the rock, and he just falls. So he's peeking around, but, like, he is on his hands and knees.
What we see is, looking around this rock with him over his shoulders, we see this gaunt, dry, gray-skinned person, like, decrepit person, hunched over the corpse of someone. Just consuming something in its cupped hands over the body of this person that has been dragged behind this rock. At this thing's side is a pair of blood-stained angelic wings in the sand.
You know what? Tate is tired of being afraid of everything that happens in these. So he's going to take a breath and stand up and just walk out.
A hand touches him on the shoulder.
Oh. Maybe he won't do that. You're so mean to me, Chris.
I like to think that there's several panels of him like psyching himself up and slowly standing up and like clenching a fist or something and taking a deep breath to go.
And then suddenly hand.
And this nice, comfortable, cool hand braces his shoulder. Glancing behind him stands this beautiful, long brown-haired woman. She's dressed in armor. Glistening silver and golds, and her skin is bronzen, and her eyes are brown, and she's looking at you with a soft look, but you can see blood trickling from the corner of her mouth. You can see her arm trembling a bit, and she seems to be having trouble breathing.
I'll take her hand and sort of step to her and see if she's okay. Like, support her if she needs support.
She does lean into you a bit, and you feel it, the weight of this person. It feels like not only is she heavy, it's probably the armor, but it feels like she's carrying a lot, nothing that you can see.
I think, like, when he takes the weight, you'll see him stumble before he can, because that's more than he was expecting.
Yeah, and her face, like, she rests her chin on his shoulder as she just, like, lays more into him. She whispers,
"You're too late. He'll be coming for you."
"Well, I'll be here first, and you can get away." And then I look at her again, and I say, "Maybe."
She slowly shakes her head. "Destiny is a powerful thing." And she coughs up blood, and she wheezes.
And the crunching behind you gets louder and more slobbish, more gurglish.
I've been hearing a lot about destiny lately. I don't really like it because I like to believe that we make our own choices and we make our own fate. So I'm going to go over there and see if I can stop him.
She holds you a bit tighter, leans into you a bit more. You're probably struggling to keep her up.
Oh, definitely. You can see trembles.
Maybe even, like, legs bowing a little bit. And yep. She, after some laborious breaths, she says,
"I used to fly so high. So close to the clouds. To the gods. Why? Who's going to watch them now?"
And she's no longer help holding herself up. She collapses completely and stops breathing.
God dang it.
The sounds behind you are also gone.
Oh, no.
Or stop, yeah.
I imagine that once she goes dead, Tay can't support her weight anymore and he'll fall. But I'd like to, at least in the panel, have them fall, like, both next to each other. So, like, she's on her back looking at the, like, well, she would be looking at this guy, and he's on his back looking at this guy. Like, you can still see the clouds from here, but we'll see what I can do. And he'll just kind of, again, push himself up to his feet and go see what's going on around the corner.
I like the image of you and her laying in the sand looking up at the sky and you saying that line and then getting ready to pick yourself up. And then, like, from the direction, like, from over your head, leans in Nathaniel with his hands in his trench coat looking down at you. You can smell stale booze on his clothing. And he just says,
well, you've seen better days, mate.
Am I awake now, or am I still in the desert?
You're still in the desert, but things are weirdly quiet. And it's not hot anymore.
I am confused, but I'll say, Nathaniel, you want to help? Can you help me up, actually?
He reaches down an arm or a hand and will help you to your feet. And then he looks at the woman dead on the ground, dead in the sand next to you, and then back at you.
That bloody sucks.
It really does. I don't know who can take her burden from her, but maybe I can try.
Maybe someday. I don't think you're ready to leave Horizon City yet. Unless you want to travel to the wastelands of Africa, become a new hero.
Is that where we are right now?
Physically, no. Metaphysically, kind of.
That's complicated. Also, how are you here?
He shrugs. And with a smile says,
would you believe me if I said magic?
Yes.
Well, magic.
And he lights up a cigarette.
All right, well, there was something on the other side of this rock, at least a moment ago, and I think I have to go see what it was, or if it's still there, or what it's become. Do you want to come with?
He shakes his head a little bit, takes a draw on the cigarette, knocks off some ash.
I think that it's probably for you to see. Just know that I'm going to be here when you're done.
All right. Moral support it is.
And we once again see Tates approach the scene of whatever behind this rock, and we see Nathaniel behind him and peeking around the rock. You find standing there, almost statuesque, almost waiting for you, is the same creature that I described before, feeding on something from a corpse. But it's standing up straight, it's facing you, and its skin is still gaunt. It hardly has eyes, but on its back are these blood-stained wings that you once saw on the ground in the sands. It's wearing nothing but rags around its waist. It definitely doesn't seem like it should be alive. It seems like a corpse that has been rotting in the ground for maybe a century or two. But it is standing there, taking deep breaths, looking at you.
I don't think those are yours. I'm just going to step out and sort of square up with it.
It doesn't react. It continues drawing in breath and exhaling.
I'll step closer. I wonder if it's saying anything. So I want to get close enough to hear.
Once you get close enough to listen to some of the breathing, to really try to make out if it's mumbling anything, you hear in its breaths, in its breathing, something of a familiar voice that says to you,
how much will you fight? What are you willing to lose?
Tate will sort of stop when he hears that. But he'll answer after a moment of thought. Like, I don't know. But I am willing to find out. And I want to say he throws a punch at the thing's face.
Yeah, he throws a punch at the winged creature's face, and as soon as the punch connects, the creature fades away as if it were made of sand. You know, it dissolves. And once the last bit of it dissolves and hits the sand at your feet, the desert around you and the rocks all dissolve as well, leaving you not in a landscape, but just in a space, in a place between places.
I'm going to look over my shoulder for Nathaniel.
He is still standing there. His one arm still in his coat. He's still smoking a cigarette. It's just you and him in this weird void. The last words that kind of echo as everything begins to fade away is,
"He's coming to take everyone from you."
You wake up and find Nathaniel sitting at the edge of your bed smoking a cigarette. Alan, last panel, do you want it just be you like bolting upright and seeing Nathaniel smoking at the edge of your bed? Do you want him to say something? Do you want to say something?
I feel like it would be very pithy for him to say something. I don't know if I would bolt upright, but like my eyes definitely would shoot open. And I imagine it's daytime now, not nighttime.
Yeah, it's the morning.
So yeah, I think it would be a series. First is just me lying in bed. You see my face with my eyes just shoot open. And then it sort of pans so you can see the window next to my bed and like the top half of my body. And then you see the full room and Nathaniel's just sitting on my bed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really feel like it would end with him just saying something.
So we get that panel with him sitting where we see the whole room and him sitting on the edge of the bed. And then the next panel is that same framing, except he has the cigarette out of his mouth. And he just says,
"Well, fuck, mate. You want to smoke?"
And he holds it out to you in the next and last panel. So at the end of the last time that we gamed, Matt, that we played Horizon, we left Recharge in quite a situation, quite a state of being.
Yeah, and he was sitting poolside, relaxing with his new girlfriend.
Oh.
It was nice, right?
Are you reading different issues than I'm reading?
Oh, I'm reading the alternate universe. Damn.
Yeah, Horizon Ultimate. You gotta keep things straight.
Horizon Ultimate, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fuck. My bad. Okay. They blend together sometimes.
Yeah, Ultimate's a lot more beach episode-y than the original line of comics.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here for the wholesome beach episodes.
Right.
Not the ones where I get stabbed to death.
Yeah. Well, you're not dead yet.
No, it's good luck killing me in this game, I guess.
It's pretty tough.
Apparently we can put us there.
Yeah, basically you have to decide if your character dies.
Which is fine.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. So, Matt, I'm assuming you remember the state we left Recharge in the scene. And one of the things that I like about comic books, or that I think I like about comic books, is scene transitions between particular comics. I feel like you can play with how one comic ended and where one comic started and kind of maybe change things around with the scene a little bit or just rehash.
Retconning.
Yeah, well, not even retconning, but just like reestablishing the scene in kind of a new way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you remember things adequately, I would kind of like you to reestablish the scene for me. We open recharges section of this comic book to take a little peek-see on what's going on. Where do we leave him? What's happening with Recharge? You know, is he dead? Is he alive? What's up?
Yeah, the first panel we open on, I believe the door was opening while we had a blacked out panel. So I think that we can reestablish the scene, probably showing it from like a top down perspective, Recharge laying on probably one of the janitor's like work tables, bleeding profusely, Greg standing over him, freaking out because he's not a medic. And then the door swinging open and the like a creak goes across the top third of the page as that door creaks open and we see a footstep in.
We see a footstep in. Yeah. You mentioned Greg is like freaking out. So we get this panel of maybe like over Greg's shoulders as he just like looks towards the doorway as this foot steps in and a individual cloaked in shadow steps into the lights of the secret base. It's an older dude, kind of hunched over. Age is definitely catching up with him. His face is sagging a little bit. He's wearing basically like a brown jumpsuit. It's a janitorial uniform. And the foot we saw stepped in was this like dirt caked boots. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a cap on his head and a small bit of like puffy white hair or gray hair sticking out of the sides. He looks at Greg and he looks at a very injured James Pepper on a workbench. There's a very small speech bubble of him muttering, "Careless," as he walks through the room and approaches Recharge James Pepper. Greg just like backs off, probably freaking out still a little bit, you know, just muttering to himself like, I don't know what to do. I'm not a medic. I and the janitor, who has been referred to as Jim before, just like pushes Greg to the side and begins work on James Pepper, on Recharge, on bandaging wounds and I guess a resetting bones, perhaps. So what follows from there is probably a few panels of just like that are coming in and out of focus. So some might be black, some just might have a like vague silhouettes of Greg and janitor Jim looming over Recharge.
One's just a just the view of the LED lights above him in the janitor's room, the bright like near white lights that are in schools and stuff like that, that kind of give you headaches.
Absolutely. If this is all from Pep's perspective, we catch glimpses of a conversation, or at least of words that are being shared between Greg and janitor Jim. And janitor Jim just reiterates, you know, he says, "Careless, foolhardy, what were you two thinking? What were you doing?" And Greg trying to come up with like excuses. Not excuses. No, Greg, he says, you know, I should have been paying attention. I thought he had it, but I should have been paying attention. And janitor
peppered in there. There's probably a thought bubbles like from Pep saying like, "What, Greg? Who? It's not your fault, Greg. You did your best.
Valor was
I'm there. The one that wasn't good enough. He was just so much faster. Should have paid attention to her too. I should have been better. I wasn't good enough. I don't think I can do this anymore, Greg. Valor was there. I should have been better. Probably just got in her way. They know where I live. They're trying to kill me. Maybe I should just let real heroes handle this."
But that's all in your head, right? Those are just thought bubbles?
Yeah, they're all thought bubbles.
Yeah. So Greg's still going off, just saying, I can't believe I should have been focused. I should have been. I knew he was going up against someone, but I thought he could take it, but I just was texting her so much and like. And janitor Jim just clears his throat and he says, "Yeah, you fucked up. All right, get a hold of yourself. Get me something clean. Get me clean water." Greg just kind of shoots to attention and moseys on out. We kind of fade out of view and then we get a few more glimpses of being worked on medically, I suppose.
So I have the grizzled janitor.
Yeah, the grizzled janitor.
Stitching me up.
Yep, stitching you up. And in some of the perspective shots we get from him, we see that he has like kind of a patchy facial hair that's also gray. Like he attends to it only once in a while. It's not fully grown out. It's just kind of there. And it definitely makes him look grizzled and gruff. But these panels come into and out of focus. And like the next one, we see Greg back and he just has like a basket full of like, I don't know, bottled water and some paper towels from a bathroom or something. And like a bag of chips, I guess. Like he definitely just grabbed a whole bunch of stuff that he thought would be useful.
There's got to be a panel where like the janitor like glares at him and the chips and he's like, what? He could get hungry when he wakes up or something.
Right. Yeah. So totally. The janitor definitely looks at Greg and then looks at the bag of chips as he's pulling out like some of the paper towels and maybe like a washcloth and the bottle of water. And Greg definitely looks up and says, he gets hungry when he wakes up. You know, it's also I'm a nervous eater. And he just like opens the bag of chips. And the Jim, the janitor, just grunts and goes back to work. And then we fade out again. We get that thing where maybe we fade in and out. We get a few more working shots in and out of focus. And then the last panel on this page is one that's completely out of focus. We're black again. And then we flip the page. And this is maybe like even a splash page of...
Yeah, I think that the splash page is probably one that takes up both pages. So it's Pep laid across the workbench that he's been laid on for Greg. He has, you know, bandages around his ribs, one going up his shoulder. There's another that's the janitor's working on tying up, but you can see the big stitch job down Pep's collarbone. The suit is just completely like cut down the middle and like ripped open. So suit's destroyed. There's blood staining the suit. Like the LED board where the big plus sign in the middle of his chest, that's like half of it's like stained in blood. So it's still lit up, but instead of like a bright blue, the top is almost like a bloody maroon purpley color. Oh, I think he had a lot of like blood and stuff running down his face too, because he took a bump to the head or something like that. So there's probably like some blood running down his face. Half of his hair is like matted to the side of his head in a darker shade.
The reason that this, the one of the big reasons that this covers so much real estate in the comic book is because Pep's basically being shocked awake. The janitor's holding something under his nose and like propping him up. And this is the panel where James Pepper returns to consciousness and sees his friends like sitting in the corner of the room, like basically. I was going to say biting his nails, but he's just like very, he's eating from a bag of chips and watching wide-eyed what's going on. And Janitor Jim's just standing over Recharge, pulling something away from his face. And he has this strong smell of like ammonia running through his head.
So he's smelling salts, man?
Oh, yeah. You come to like violently.
There's definitely a panel of like Recharge's eyes popping open, pupils dilated. And he's just going, I'm up. Ow, I was up too fast.
Janitor Jim just like he was propping you up for the smelling salts, but he like helps you up a little bit more or like steadies you as you like bolt upright. And he places you delicately like back against the wall so that you don't slump over. But as soon as he does that, he just like backs off and like dusts off his hands and wipes his hands, which are bloodied, on his jumpsuit.
Before he backs off, Recharge will like reach up a hand and like touch Jim's stubble and just say, Greg, you've aged. Have I been in a coma?
And as you're doing that, Greg like shoots up from his stool and rushes over and like grabs your hand and moves it to his face as the janitor backs away. And Greg's just like, I'm here, buddy. I'm here.
Oh, good, Greg. You're still smooth.
Yeah, still can't grow facial hair, but that's neither here nor there. you feel like crumbs on the side of his face. It's a little greasy from all the chips he's been shoving into his face.
Greg, why do you smell like those awful cheeseburger Doritos?
These are unimportant questions, Pep. How are you okay? Is he okay? And like Greg asks over his shoulder, and the janitor just grunts.
I think the smelling salts have given me a heightened sense of smell briefly. I smell everything, Greg.
is this normal? And the janitor just grunts again.
Hey, Greg. Everyone saw me get my ass kicked, didn't they?
It's kind of going viral, yeah. Listen, the only thing that matters, dude, is that you're alive, okay? I was super worried about you.
Wait. Where's Sky?
She,
did she get out?
Yeah, she gave a really lackluster speech to the crowd. she told everyone to chillax and everything was fine.
Oh, that's gonna make it so much worse.
The janitor grunts again. He actually, like, something loud hits the floor as he grunts, like he knocks something off of a shelf.
Watch out. That's where Greg keeps all the retro controllers.
And the janitor, just at this point, he, like, spins around to face the two of you, and he leans up against the bench he's near that he'd knocked off one of the retro controllers from. And he's, like, wiping down his hands with a wet washcloth now, and he's looking at the two of you, and he has, like, these steely, cold, old man eyes. It's at that point he, like, looks at the two of you, he looks around the room, and then back at the two of you, and he says,
"Is this a goddamn hero base, or is this a fucking treehouse hangout for little boys?
Can it be both?"
And he steps forward. He kind of looms over you a little bit, Pep, and he says...
Pep's gonna flinch and say, "I bruise easy."
"I've noticed. Listen... This place can only be both if you think going out there is a fucking game. And based on the way you look, yeah, looks like that is how you operate."
And he looks over at Greg.
Can we have a flashback panel, Chris?
Of course we can have a flashback panel, Matt.
I think the flashback panel I want to do is a flashback panel to issue 15, where Recharge encountered that woman in the alleyway with, I think it was Todd and Tate. And she said that being a superhero isn't all fun and games. And then as she was walking by Pep, he said, "I'm not doing this for fun." And then we can have a panel side by side of, I think, Pep saying a little less confidently to Jim, "I'm not doing this because it's fun."
I think even Greg, like, tries to back you up, or at least, like, say his own version of that, because he probably feels attacked too. And he just, stands next to you as effectively as he can and says, "Yeah, we're not just playing games. That's not what this is about." Janitor Jim sizes both of you over again and says,
"That display tonight, fucking games in here. How ill-prepared both of you are for this shit. Looks like you are just playing games. You think you can throw on a cape, stomp onto the streets, earn yourself some real cred? You can't."
"I don't wear a cape."
"Probably for the best. But anyways, what the two of you are doing, it's fucking goddamn embarrassing. And you're going to get yourselves killed. I mean, look at this place. Let me ask you this. You've been paying attention to news? Do you know who Sky Valor's working for these days? You know?"
I imagine there's just a panel of, like, shifty eyes between Greg and Pat.
Yeah, and, like, Greg slowly begins to, like, raise his hand like he's answering a question in class, but he thinks better of it. And Janitor Jim just says,
"She's working for the goddamn trifecta. All right, you know who works with the trifecta? Binary. You know what Binary's whole thing is? Using the internet to get to prey. Guess what? This whole place connected to the internet. You ever think of that? You want to keep your identity secret? Did you," he turns to Greg, "did you ever consider that if Binary wanted to find the two of you, you'd be found in a fucking instant? Are you serious about what you're doing? Do you give a shit about this at all?"
And I think Greg just looks like he doesn't know. He's devastated. You know, he backs away from this guy.
Pep, like, raises his hand, like, slightly, like, "Of course I'm serious. I got cocky. I mean, I got my ass kicked. Who are you?"
He shifts his gaze from Greg, who is now, like, cowering, over to you, Pep. And he opens his mouth and then he just starts going, And he, like, backs away and grabs that water bottle he's been using all night. And he starts taking a few, like, sips, like, frantic sips of water.
"Who I am is the person who helped you make this fucking base, who wanted to see how you do as heroes, and it's fucking disgraceful. So now I'm asking myself, Is this really what you want to do? Is this what you're made for? Because you can fucking leave right now. You at least did an okay job hiding your identity, but this could be it. Maybe you should just walk out the door, go home, lick your wounds, and call it a day. Retire early while you still can.
Wait. Greg made this base.
And Greg just like mutters, "The janitor, help me."
Greg, what? He knew we were down here?
Greg nods, and Janitor Jim's just like, "Where the hell do you think that kid got the sort of technology?"
Greg, I thought you made it. I thought you were like a super genius.
I put together a lot of it. Like, I don't have a job I can't afford, you know.
Right, I thought you were just like, I don't know, picking it out of a landfill or something.
I did for some of the stuff.
Why wouldn't you tell me this, Greg?
He kind of just like looks down and he says, "I'm supposed to be the smart guy."
Did he know who I was?
Greg looks up at him. The janitor says,
"Listen, the one thing you don't have to blame your idiot friend for is for me finding out your secret identity. Good at this shit."
"How did you find out?"
Straightens up and he puts the cap back on the bottle of water and sets it aside.
"I've been at this game a lot longer than you, kid. I know how to find information. Yeah, I've known for some time, had my eyes on you."
"Alright, so are you like a secret agent? Or are you like undercover right now as a janitor to bust up some crime ring in the school?"
No. I'm just an old hero on the tail end of his days."
"Ooh, are you off the grid laying low? Because there are people who want to like, you know," and he'll like drag his thumb across his throat and then be like, "Ow."
"I mean, yeah, heroes make enemies. A lot of people would like to see me dead. But, that's not the reason. No. Listen, my, days in the city are numbered. I just want to make damn sure that when I'm gone, there's at least some proper heroes to take care of the filth in the city."
"So why me?"
"At first, it was because you stepped up. I saw what you could do. You had potential. Maybe you still do. It all depends, though, if you can get your fingers out of your ass and really step up to the plate and start taking things seriously."
Hey. I put on a helmet. I put on a suit. I didn't ask anybody for help. I've been doing this since day one. Well, Greg, thank you, Greg. Greg and I have been doing this since day one with no help. We're still just figuring it all out. You keep saying it's fun and games and that we have our fingers up our butts, but we're just kids."
"You're just kids.
We're stupid."
"Okay. So are you just kids or are you a fucking hero?"
"I'd like to think both. Again,
you don't get to be both, kid."
I'm starting to see that now.
"If I didn't come by tonight, chances are you'd be dead by now. All right. You want to sit there and think you don't need my help? Think that you can play hero and also be a kid? Go get yourself killed. Quite a service you'll do for the city."
"I never said I didn't need help. I just don't know what I'm doing. I didn't know who to ask. I can't go to a teacher. What was I going to do? Go knock on the trifecta's office door and say, 'Hi, I'd like to be a superhero. This is what I can do.'"
He kind of shrugs.
"I think that what you really needed to do, give this whole business a little bit more thought. You're powerful. You can do a lot of damage. Tonight, you were more of a danger to the people around you, to yourself and the people around you, than you were to any bad guy. So maybe you want to take a minute, think about really what you want to do, where you want to go. And once you've decided that, then we can start talking about your future. But you need to be committed to wear a mask. If you're not committed, you just get yourself killed. That's the way this works."
Finn will reach up, do like gingerly touch the new stitches on his shoulder and say, "Thank you. You're saving my life."
"Yeah, I didn't just save your life tonight. I'm also the reason that Binary's not going to be knocking on your door later."
Is Binary who's after you? You've said a lot about Binary. It's like you, Pep squints his eyes.
"No, but in terms of people who can get access to information right quick, Binary's one of the biggest threats in the city. So I've spent a lot of time working to figure out countermeasures for him."
And he looks over at Greg and he looks back at you. And he kind of shakes his head.
"I hope you figure out what the fuck you're doing sometime soon."
And he'll make to leave. I think in the process of him leaving, as you see him turn to go, like the weight of the conversation of having this like old, grizzled, maybe a little bit crazy, like on the tail end of his ears, Hero, tell you effectively how disappointing you've been.
I mean, obviously we have been.
Right, right. Like, in the silence that's following him making his leave, there's this weight in the room. I think this weight and his words could potentially shift Pep's labels. As always, you can either accept it or you can try to throw off his influence. But so you know, he's trying to shift your labels. He effectively said that you're incredibly dangerous. You're capable. You know, you're a good fighter, but you're a threat to yourself and people around you. He's increasing your danger and lowering your savior.
I mean, yeah. So danger's now at a 3, savior's at -2.
Yeah, and I think that's the highest and lowest both of those can go. Do you have anything else for the scene? Do you want to tell me the last panel we get of the segments?
Last panel? I think we will have Pep sitting, kind of sitting up on the bench that was being worked on, kind of staring at his feet, staring at the ground. Greg behind him, arms folded, the bag of chips still in hand. Greg will reach out, tap Pep on the shoulder, says, "You've lost a lot of blood, buddy. You need to eat something." And then Pep will just smack the bag of chips out of his hand, saying, "We need to get this shit together, Greg." And he'll get up off the table and start to walk out of the room.
And I think to really cap that off, as Pep leaves the room, Greg just kind of like looks down again, like looks down at the bag of chips that are on the ground and glancing over at the retro controller that's actually kind of broken apart a little bit after being knocked to the ground. And he gives this hefty sigh and like he moves his hand up and presses something on the side of his face, and there's this glint to his eyes that just completely die off. He's effectively powered down his personal networking device. I think the last thing we see of him is him saying,
"Secret base, disengage."
Hello, entire internet. Thank you for sticking around and listening to A Critically Occurs Podcast Presents Horizon, a tale of heroes and hormones. As always, we appreciate your continued support. Hope you enjoy the show. And if you do, please scroll down and check out some of our social media links. Follow us on Twitter. We probably have a Facebook page by now. Join our Discord and talk to us. We are desperate for friends. I say this a lot because it's true. Special thanks in this one to me, Matt, the best of us, for helping me edit this issue. Unfortunately, Matt, you forgot to leave me some outtakes to use before and after the show, so womp womp. Please stick around. There's only one way to find out what happens to our heroes on their continuing adventure in the land of comic book inspired tabletop RPG podcasts. I will catch you guys next time. You're a superhero.